Welcome to Dazer Update for January 22nd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Revictorio.
And yeah, we got a busy week of news, as we've got a bunch of stuff getting dates, a bunch of other news going on, not so great stuff. The tech industry, gaming industry, all that have had a bad week. Mostly because capitalism demands a blood sacrifice from time to time.
Yep.
And that has definitely happened to a company that, say, is trying to acquire more people. So that's going to be a fun thing. And there's another company who is not having a great time with their developers.
Yeah.
Along with that, we got a bunch of other news. We got PlayStation VR 2 getting a good look at its launch lineup. Mm-hmm. It is pretty well stacked.
Yeah.
And we'll get to a bunch of other dates and such here. Before we do, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. Been playing a good bit more One Piece Odyssey. Mm-hmm. About like 9 hours in or so at this point. And now had the ability to fast travel. Using some one of the creatures that you find. You find these markers all around the map. That are confusing because nobody knows what they're for, and then get introduced to this concept through there. So I'm looking forward to having an easier way to get around, because they do have things around the different maps that are reasons to come back. Particularly, there are these like places where a bridge would go, but say Frankie, the shipbuilder, is not around to build them. So they build in some arbitrary means for requiring you to come back, as well as like just started getting to treasure chests that need keys for some reason. That doesn't make any sense, but you know, that stuff is going on still in Alabasta as I'm working my way through that. So this game's got a lot to it, so I'm looking forward to put some more time into that. For one of the streams this week, I decided to start Hell Pie, which is a 3D platformer that came out last year. That is very heavily influenced by like Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Extremely influenced.
In terms of being a very gross and grotesque kind of game.
Yeah.
As you play a minion of Satan in his office, his office building, essentially, that is sent to do an errand and fetch the chef and figure out what's going on with his birthday cake.
Yep.
And all that's in our birthday pie, I think. And the chef kind of was like freaking out because he forgot about it. And sends you on, you know, a quest to get him things that he needs, like pie crust and other things. And that has you go through like this weird supermarket. And yeah, it's a 3D platformer more so than the Conker Bad Fur Day stuff was. That took a lot of breaks into other styles of games whenever it did its parodies. Here it's not doing so much of that. It's a lot of just going around to these hub areas, essentially kind of looking around, grabbing the main currency that's just for unlocking outfits. And that currency constantly respawns. So like if you die, you come back, it's like everything respawns anywhere. Enemies also respawn. There's not much of a reason to really be super precious about that stuff. You'll find crates with currency in them. When you break them, they'll go spilling out all over the place, and sometimes they'll go down into the abyss and all that. So it's not being super precious about that stuff. But like, even I think that it would have been better if anything that gets like falls off the map into, you know, lava or whatever, just warp to you like Ratchet and Clank did, you know, 20 years ago. Here it's just like, whatever.
I think part of the big difference is that on top of that, like, for whatever faults it did have, Conker's Bad Fur Day was actually a pretty good dark comedy, like, all around, and was, like, actually funny. Hell Pie just isn't. It relies way too much on, you know, the juvenile humor without any kind of trying to go any deeper than that.
Yeah, it has some moments, but not overall it's trying a little too hard at times.
Yeah.
Especially when you get to the first hub area and you're going to explore around, it's basically, you know, a couple of islands,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And you run into this one area that goes to where the demo was at when the Steam Demo Fest was going on. This is the demo area, which is in the sewers,
mm-hmm.
Where you run into, I think most of the enemies are pieces of shit, turds, mm-hmm. That they call the shit stoffel.
Because yeah.
Some of them have what look like Nazi hats on.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Where it's like, okay, what's the politics of this game? Because elsewhere on the island, you run into hippies, and they clearly don't like hippies.
Yeah.
Make them very much a jokey thing. But I think it's just trying to be like South Park, I guess. Take shots at everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the sewers were all right. The boss fight was pretty easy there. But yeah, exploring the island, it's not hard to get, you know, into places where you're unsure what to do. Like the platforming can be a little clumsy mm-hmm. at times because there's like the ability to do like a wall jump essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're too close to the wall, it doesn't activate. That kind of stuff. So I'll be trying to make jumps. And the other cool thing with the gameplay is that you get this cherub that essentially acts as an anchor point to do like a rope swing. And so as you collect more of the whatever, it's like it's a can of like candy meat or something, whatever they call it,
mm-hmm.
that the cherub eats that then becomes skill points that you can use to upgrade your abilities. Usually for like, oh, you can, you know, do more of the rope swings in succession, that kind of stuff, or get some other bonus abilities and such. And it's a pretty solid game, gameplay-wise. Mm-hmm. Very much all about, you know, collectibles and unlocking the cosmetics, because I think you get trophies or achievements for getting all of them in each area.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you definitely have to do a lot of running around as the outfit selection is specific to the areas you're in, versus just being like, oh, you've been to these areas, here's all the outfits you can purchase, kind of thing. And they're all, you know, they're just outfits, nothing really amazing to them. On the island one, you get a lot of, you know, Hawaiian shirt style outfits.
Mm-hmm.
The ones for the cherub are the most crass. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, here's a mankini for this chubby little cherub and other dumb stuff. So I think the one I put on it when I got it was just like a little floater thing for swimming in a pool kind of thing. But the game's pretty solid, but the humor is the thing that sticks out is like not being super great most of the time. Which I think I got the same kind of impression with Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yeah.
Especially looking at it from, you know, modernize.
Yeah.
Versus what it was doing then. Because I never really played it back then. I saw some bits and pieces, but yeah, it's something that just, when I try it, it's also like whenever I see people start it up, it's like it starts up with a Saving Private Ryan bit.
Yeah.
That is probably an easy point for people to bounce off of,
because
that's not like any other parts of the game.
Yeah.
It's like when they go into their parody sections,
yeah,
it changes up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So like, here's this like challenging shooter thing where shooters weren't a thing that you knew how to control then.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a whole thing, but this game, it's pretty easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
You got your double jumps, your wall jumps, your rope swings, dashes, all that stuff adds for a pretty good arsenal of moves and all that. The humor is just maybe the one thing that sticks out as like, it's not great. But you also don't have to gauge with it too much, so you can kind of just move on. So yeah, there's Hell Pie, one of the more solid 3D indie 3D platformers of last year. Let's see, Persona 4 Golden and Persona 3 Portable came out on everything last week. I picked up Persona 3 Portable on my PS5. though it's a PS4 version, because conveniently the game that Microsoft got to do a bunch of marketing for doesn't have a PS5 version, but does have Xbox Series X and S native versions. So maybe that'll happen at some point, the PS5 version, but pronounced just PS4, though there's not really any major advantage to it for that, because it's still just a PSP game. It runs well, does all that stuff. I am about 2 hours in at this point, basically just finished going through and beating the first big enemy fight you get.
Yeah.
You get the reins taken off of you for that stuff. And yeah, the exploration's still the same way, where you're not going through 3D areas. You're going through essentially just overviews of these different areas and highlighting the, you know, doors and such that you want to go into for different buildings and all that. So that's the main sticking point that I think people that prefer classic Persona 3 to this, which is reasonable, but also, you know, running through those areas can get tedious at times. Though you do get means of warping around, but I think it works out all right in that favor, because the Tartarus stuff, you get the ability to warp out more easily and save your progress there versus having to do a bunch of floors of this dungeon in a row without much of a chance for a break from that. And I do like that I believe they've, you know, upgraded some of the means of, you know, fusing personas and getting bonuses and all that kind of stuff from the original game as well. So a lot of the bonus, the shuffle time stuff I would get is like, here is, you know, your fourth weapon for, you know, Junpei that he already has equipped. So I'll sell those to the cop.
Yeah.
Make a bunch of money. And upgrade all my weapons more easily. So yeah, if you've played Persona 4 or Persona 5, it's largely the same kind of experience. Just Persona 3 was the one that sets the standards for all that stuff. And it's still weird when that game starts that you're just seeing a teenage girl try to shoot herself in the face.
Yep.
That was controversial back then, and more so now.
Yeah. Pretty much the reason why the game sort of managed to become a hit through word of mouth is the whole mechanic of using, you know, guns to summon your personas, basically.
It's this game where these high schoolers just shoot themselves in the head to summon demons to fight for them.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, like, for me in particular, when that game first came out, I had no idea why it had M rating, and that's literally my only explanation, the whole, like, gunshots to the head of teenagers.
Yep.
Yeah. There's also plenty of blood splatter around the Tartarus floors.
Yep.
Because it's a... I mean, the other part is that the Tartarus forms in the dark hour out of their school. So that's also a weird connotation of teenagers shooting themselves in a school.
Yep.
A twisted version of a school.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that's kind of the most freaky about the game, it's the notion that if you spend too much time in the dungeons, death comes for you and will just one-shot you.
The Reaper. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'll start hearing chains. It's in Persona 4 as well.
Yeah, they're in all of them, I think.
Yeah. Which is like, I hate that sound so much because it's so creepy and you're like, I don't want to waste all my time here. Because these games don't have continues. You die, you go back to your last save, and that's, I think it can be very annoying depending on how much time you spend in these dungeons. So yeah, that's definitely a thing. So yeah, enjoying it still. I've never been able to put too much time into Persona 3. Haven't played a good bit on PSP back in the day. So now I got a second chance to go back and have a better chance of getting through it. The thing that makes that easier on like the Persona games is that you can just say, like, I'll play, you know, a couple days and hang out and get, you know, social links up and or go into the dungeon for a bit and get some grind for some XP and gear that I can sell, that kind of stuff. makes it a bit more consumable in smaller chunks than your typical JRPG, especially if they don't have save anywhere mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go. Persona 3 Portable, still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Persona 4 Golden is supposed to also be pretty good. The major knock is that Sega decided not to credit the translation team on these games.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's the entire appeal of these games, is because the localization teams have done a great job with these games.
Mm.
But Sega joins the list of other companies decided to tell them to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Not give them the credit they deserve. So yeah, there you go for that. The other game I played is Monster Hunter Rise. I started this up on my PC. Took a little work to get it running well. Ended up just using the... if you're playing on PC, GeForce Experience is a thing. If you have an NVIDIA card, essentially they have a means for taking your graphics card and your other specs and saying, like, here are the optimal, you know, settings for your graphics, mm-hmm. to make it run as well as possible. And that's what I ended up doing for Monster Hunter Rise, and that worked pretty well. Then I decided to try and stream it, and that was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, OBS takes up a good bit of your resources when doing that, so I had to knock it down a bit on the specs there and the graphical settings, which wasn't too big of an issue. But yeah, this game, compared to World, does a better job of getting you started. Because
mm-hmm.
Monster Hunter World throws you through a whole thing, a big spectacle as you're getting set up or getting started, because you're, everybody's going to the new world and they're on the boats, and guess what, a monster attacks, and you got to get off the ship to survival. And then I think you go through one of the areas to get to the main base for all the hunters. And that's a whole big thing. It's cool for what it was. But we don't need that anymore. Here, mm-hmm. they're just like, you're in a village. You're ready to become a hunter. Let's go get you registered. Great. Go do some quests.
Yeah.
All that. The only real issue I had is that Monster Hunter has a very specific style of control. It took me a while to break my usual, like, a, you know, action RPG kind of control expectations, which meant that I was constantly almost using a potion. As you would think, square, you know, your X button is your main attack button. But in Monster Hunter, that is to use an item, whatever you have set. And so I was having to, you know, constantly brush up against that. But I eventually figured it out for the most part.
Mm.
Did a couple of easy quests and then decided, like, let's just go for one of the big guys, which was biting off a bit more than I could chew, but I eventually got it. It was this, I forget what it was called, but it's a big firebird that likes to fight on one of its legs. In a very weird, like, Karate Kid style. It likes to use the other leg to kick you or do spinning kicks and weird stuff. And I had to figure out that interface, because it showed me in the, I think it was R3 you had to push to have it focus on, like, the three main monsters that were on the map, and me just starting was not sure which one was the target for the quest, so I had to figure that out. Wasn't too big of an issue, but the other nice thing is that you also have a palico and a palamute, basically an anthropomorphic cat and a dog that you can fight with. The dog you can run ride on and get around a bit more quickly, all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty nice change of pace, like get you around a little faster in the world than you would in World.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been pretty nice. It has a nice style to it, a little bit more kind of watercolor style to a lot of its art in this game, so it gives it kind of a fresh style on a PC. And the cool thing with the PC version is they have options to say, like, hey, what do you want your buttons to look like? You don't want to be all your button prompts to be, you know, Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS4, PS5, or Switch,
mm-hmm.
Which was nice. I think the only issue is that it only loads that when I load my character. So I see like Xbox until I get my DualSense buttons, that kind of thing. A little weird. The game's still got a bit of jank to it, but for the most part, they've ironed over that a lot. And the nice thing also jumping into this Monster Hunter Rise now is that they've given you a lot of bonus stuff from the one dude in the town that a lot of it is just the various limited time quests they gave out. But you also get some armor sets and a bunch of materials and items that you can use for potions and all that kind of stuff. So I believe that's also in the console versions, the new console versions as well. So if you're just jumping in, that stuff helps make it a lot easier. So you don't have to necessarily grind out, you know, materials to make basic potions. You'll probably have at least like 50 in your item chest that you can pull out from whenever you need it. So that helps out a lot for people just getting started in those games. So the one issue I have is that when you talk to somebody, it takes like 10 seconds before you can click on any other person or to leave the area, that kind of thing. That might be a thing that is because I'm putting this on my regular regular hard drive on my PC. I should probably move it over to my SSD drive. But yeah, that's been Monster Hunter Rise, and that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, I've pretty much been only playing Xenoblade Chronicles 3 pretty much all week because for one thing, I'm really enjoying it, and also because I want to finish it so I can start playing, you know, the new Persona games that are now available. But yeah, it's still amazing. And the thing is, it's one of those games where it keeps adding layers on itself. It's, you know, it like already from the very beginning, it sets you up for like a pretty dark storyline, considering it's literally about two different countries who basically raise pod people that only have a 10-year lifespan to act as soldiers against each other. And their only reward for it is if they live to be 10 years, they eventually die again and return to the queen, wherein they can possibly be reborn yet again as a soldier. But it keeps getting deeper because, and I don't want to spoil too much because there's a lot that happens right around the midway point. But what happens is you eventually discover a community of people called the Lost Numbers who live in a place called the City, and it's located inside the giant sword, which is, you know, the sword of the huge sword that you see on the cover. It was originally the sword of the Bionis. And these are people who were like descendants of a group of individuals, both from those two warring nations, those pod people who defected and decided to go off and start their own movement to try and stop the war. And these are all their descendants living inside this city. And it's amazing because this is literally the first time that the party has seen how people are actually supposed to be, like, you know, born, you know, they've seen the life cycle of birth, childhood, adulthood, aging, and then, you know, death naturally. And that's already like pretty mind blowing. But then there's this revelation later on that, like, you know, that, you know, the war between the two sides has been going on for a while, but you don't realize just how long it's been going on. And furthermore, you realize that the struggle against them has been a sort of almost a repetition over and over of a group of people constantly being born again, dying, trying to being born again, and then trying to, you know, start the rebellion or trying to escape from it and then dying again over and over and over. And yeah, it's just, it's so good, you guys. It really is. It's amazing. And it's legitimately a lot of fun. I will say again, though, and I said this when I first started playing it, if you're a person who doesn't like a bunch of cutscenes in your games, you're not going to like this, because there is a bunch of cutscenes in this game. A lot of them. And some of them can last pretty long. Like close to half an hour. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch of stuff lately. I've continued my indie marathon with Old Man's Journey. This game came out a few years ago, and it's sort of an adventure puzzler. What happens is you play this old man, or you pretty much just guide him through. So this old man receives a letter, and he has to just travel over to, you know, a family member. And basically, it's one of those games where he just you pretty much just tell him where to go, and then you have to manipulate the background in such a way where you can go ahead and clear the path. So during the first part of the game, like, you have to go to the hotel, which is beyond these hills, and you actually just control the hills. You just bring them up or down in such a way where the old man can go ahead and walk that direction. And along the way, there's other things to do. Like, there's this train track thing where once he gets into the train, you want to make sure that the train tracks are clear and that they're connected so that the train can continue to move. And if you're able to have the train not stop, you get a trophy. So yeah, another game with a pretty easy platinum that you can beat within like an hour and a half if you want to sit down for all that long. And yeah, like there's some pretty good like environmental storytelling going on there. It's a really nice narrative. I also played through The Gardens Between, another indie title. And this one was rather interesting. It took a while for me to like really grasp like what I was doing here. And basically, you take control of these two friends, and you go through like sort of this isometric path. And it's one of those things where, again, you don't really do much as far as controlling these two characters, where you just hold left and right, and then the map will just go ahead and generate itself, and you have to go ahead and solve these puzzles in order for them to get through. So they start off really simple. Like, the first level actually just has you rewind the level so that you can just connect these things in order to find your way to the end. And as you get as you move forward with the game, it just gets a whole lot more complicated, where you have to pause. You have to pause time in certain situations in order to open the path forward. Like, there's one where you're dealing with leaky pipes, and you have to pause time so that when thunder hits, it hits these the wet parts of the pipes, and all of a sudden it expands to hit other things, and then it just opens up the path that way. So yeah, a lot of interesting puzzlery there. That was a pretty fun one. You can probably beat it within like 3 hours. Maybe even more if you just, like, you know, don't really know what to do. And, yeah. As for new stuff, have a couple of games for review. The first of which is A Place for the Unbound. And this one was made by an Indonesian developer. And it's sort of a slice of life side-scrolling game where it's pretty much like a point-and-click style. So, yeah, there's some side-scrolling, but there isn't really that much action. It's a matter of like doing fetch quests and things like that. And it's interesting because there's a whole lot of like deep felt friendship and heartache here. The first chapter of the game deals with a little girl who is writing a story, but isn't really allowed outside just because of like an over strict parent and things like that. And then eventually, as the game moves forward to the current time, you find that his girlfriend has like these powers, and the more that she uses her powers, the more she hurts herself. So I'm only about two chapters through. This developer is really known for having really, really short games, but I don't really sense when this game will end. It might even take more than 10 hours. I don't know yet. And the big thing that I've been playing is Fire Emblem Engage. This game came out on Friday, and for some reason, Target got me my copy early on Wednesday, which I am not complaining, because so far I'm really, really enjoying this one. If you've started with Fire Emblem with Awakening, and, you know, just continue to enjoy it with Three Houses and whatnot, this one is going to be different in the sense where it really goes back to its roots here. The weapon triangle is back. In the previous games, it didn't really matter. And by the weapons triangle, I'm talking about swords beating lances, lance beating swords and swords beating axes, axes beating lances, and lances beating swords. And it matters way more now because in most opportunities, if you hit your opponent's weakness, all of a sudden they're disarmed for the whole turn. And it really opens up another sense of difficulty in the game because, you know, if you're someone who's been playing Fire Emblem for a while, you'd be used to the formula where, like, yeah, you have your main character, but all of a sudden he'll be escorted by a character in a more advanced class. And even though, like, this character can own, they're really weak when you compare them to, like, characters that you actually raise from the beginning and then evolve them at the end. So, the story really isn't much to write home about. You're dealing with, like, your typical Fire Emblem dragons and, like, random deaths and kingdoms and whatnot. And honestly, it's not much to write home about. And my main complaint so far is the voice acting. I'm dealing with a lot of characters who seem like I think they'll be evil, and then all of a sudden, like, no, they're really good, and then they die. So it's like, oh, okay. I don't really know who to trust because I don't really understand the tone of voices that they're making here. But I will say that on the Switch OLED, this game looks absolutely fantastic. It is easily one of the better looking games on the Switch, which is definitely a far cry from what I've been used to as of late with Pokemon, with the latest Pokemon games. So yeah, it's really been enjoyable so far. And if you've been a fan of Fire Emblem since the beginning, this should scratch that itch if you thought that the last few were a little easy, because they were. I'm only in Chapter 6, and I've died more than a few times, and I'm playing on normal mode with Permadeath on, and yeah, it's pretty punishing. But at the same time, like, this is pure Fire Emblem, and I'm really enjoying it. And that's about it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news here.
Mm-hmm.
First up, we got Power Wash Simulator finally coming out for PS5, PS4, and Switch on January 31st.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside a big new content update featuring Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
This is a group of five special maps, so those will be in the special map section of the game, where you will be essentially getting hired by Laura, I guess, to clean up her mansion and some of her vehicles and all that. I believe the little bits they've showed here, you know, there's the outside of the manor. Mm-hmm. For that, that's pretty easy to understand. I think a couple of vehicles, as well as some interior stuff, especially cleaning up her museum area of all the artifacts she's stolen.
Yep.
So that's another neat thing. I guess when you just kill a T-Rex, you're just like, I'll just keep it. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, give it to, you know, scientists to study, you know, a T-Rex that was living mm-hmm. in modern times. So, you know, there's lots of weird stuff with that you could explore as a commentary on, you know, the British's, proclivity to stealing ancient artifacts from other people.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably won't, because it's Power Wash Simulator. It's not going to go that deep in story stuff, but it's at least a bit of a surprising thing. Probably a partnership that they were working on before Square Enix sold off all their Eidos stuff. But still fun that they got to finish it and are putting it out for free as a free update on January 31st alongside the other new version. So I'm curious to see, like, what if they have, you know, gyro support on the new consoles here and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The devs have put up an FAQ page for this announcement that says, like, there's no cross-play with the new platforms. That is only between the Xboxes and PC versions, unfortunately. But that's all I think it mentions, really. Also that the Research Edition, if you have it on Steam, that if you, you know, play enough of it, you unlock a bunch of new items for the game whenever they're done. That'll also be part of this update. So that's another nice thing that comes with this. But that's pretty much it. More people can check out this great, weird game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see how it does on those platforms So yeah, there you go. Something to check out. That'll be next Tuesday on the 31st. So that'll be fun. Also happening on the 31st, Jet the Far Shore is getting a free expansion campaign. What are they calling it here? Given Time. Campaign that takes place 3 years following the end of the events of Jet the Far Shore. So that's cool. It'll be a free update for the PlayStation and PC versions for people to check out. It's something they've been, if you're on their newsletter, they've been talking about having some new campaign stuff in this game. So this is nice bonus stuff. So that's cool. Another reason to check it out. There's an event happening this week that I did not get. I did not see any articles about it. I'm just reminded seeing on Gamatsu here. Thunderful Games is hosting a SteamWorld Telegraph special broadcast on the 23rd, January 23rd, tomorrow, where they're going to talk about whatever's next for the SteamWorld franchise.
All right.
Probably talking about the big 3D game they announced a while ago that they haven't talked about.
Yeah.
As well as maybe some other stuff. I don't know if there's a new Dig game in the works or anything, but that'll be fun. Basically happen at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 o'clock Pacific on their YouTube channel. So I'll be working, but I'll be curious to see what happens there. So there you go for something that's a little more immediate. Let's see. Also happening, let's see, next week. That'll be February 2nd on Groundhog Day, Fashion Police Squad. Coming to basically everything. PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Switch. It's out on PC now. It is basically a retro-style first-person shooter where you're shooting people, but not to kill them, but to replace their shitty style with something fabulous. I believe in the trailer I was watching this, when you know, empty out their life bar, it pops up something like yes or fabulous, you know, something like that as they get introduced to their new outfit, you know, dashing, you know, all that kind of stuff as you're, you know, sniper shooting people in the new outfits, all this kind of weird stuff. Very silly game. Looks pretty neat for what it is. So, yeah, if you're looking for something humorous to check out, that one seems like something to keep an eye on. Yeah, Fashion Police Squad.
Yeah,
there you go. Next up here, Sony's got a big game coming out in a few weeks. Returnal is hitting PC on February 15th. They also posted, you know, recommended specs for all the different tiers of whatever recommended specs they have here, and they are pretty beefy for what you might expect out of this game. At the very least, you need at least 16 gigs of RAM, and for the 4K modes, you'll need 32 gigs of RAM, as well as seems like about 60 gigs of hard drive space, while also recommending SSD for pretty much every tier of this. And you have some pretty beefy graphics cards as well for that stuff. So yeah, it's going to be seemingly like one of those first big games coming from the new consoles that you will need to have, you know, your shit and gear on PC if you want to play it to its fullest.
Oh yes. That game is, you would be surprised how graphics heavy that game actually is. Especially considering that, you know, the most of the environments are just kind of a drab blue. But either way, yeah, it's a fantastic game, and I'm glad that people are finally getting a chance to play it outside of the PS5, because it is a hell of a game.
Yeah, and they don't mention any of these tiers as 30 FPS. They're all 60 FPS. The minimum one's 720p at 60 FPS, which is pretty reasonable for what it has, but it's still, you know, SSD and all that, 16 gigs of RAM and all that. So, yeah, it's a game that people should definitely check out, and it seems like they'll fully support the DualSense with the haptic feedback and adaptive trigger stuff that you've seen on the PS5 version. So that's great. That's a game that uses that controller really well. So yeah, that's great news, where people can check out that. And they kept the train of good news going as they revealed 13 new titles for PlayStation VR 2, as well as a good look at the launch lineup. I think still there are a couple things that have been announced since then, as devs are just finishing up their work to be ready for launch or soon after to announce stuff. That's this whole lineup's in flux still. But yeah, they first off go into Gran Turismo 7, which got announced at CES, and you know, confirm that it is the full game. I think the only mode that it doesn't support is split screen, and that's for obvious reasons. Because you know, you're not going to be able to do split screen in VR. So there's that. Let's see. Before Your Eyes. This is, I guess, like a narrative game of sorts. So that's cool. Yeah, from Skybound Games. There's Kayak VR Mirage. I think this just came out on PlayStation VR pretty recently in the past few months. This is a game where you're, you know, in a kayak exploring these different areas. They say Antarctica, Costa Rica, Norway, Australia, doing a bunch of stuff there. I think that one might be cross-buy. They don't always mention it in the descriptions here. But there's that. Let's see. There's Pavlov, which is sort of a hardcore military shooter. It's been pretty popular on PC VR. It's coming to PSVR 2 now. So that's good. There's Puzzling Places. This came out on PSVR like a year or two ago. It's a essentially like a 3D jigsaw puzzle game, essentially, where you're putting together these little dioramas in 3D space. So that'll be a free upgrade for people who own the PSVR version. That'll be a launch title. And they talk about all the stuff they're supporting with haptic feedback, adaptive triggers, eye tracking for selecting different pieces you want to grab, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they have a 1,000-piece puzzle in this new version. So Song in the Smoke, which came out a few years ago from 17-bit, is getting a rekindled version. They're upgrading it, the visuals and all that stuff. So that'll be a free upgrade. There's Synth Riders Remastered Edition. Another game from PSVR that's getting an upgrade, free upgrade, all that. So that's cool to see. Thumper is also coming. That is the, I think they call it hardcore rhythm action violence. Pure rhythm violence is a way they describe this game. It is basically a rhythm game where you are traveling down this like note highway, trying to do the right things to counter the various attacks and obstacles that the demonic god or whatever it's at the end of the highway is trying to do to you. And so they've talked about that. It's getting a PS5 and PSVR 2 upgrades, so you can play it in 2D if you want. They're still figuring out pricing details, but I think they've said it's going to be an upgrade, paid upgrade for that, so they're still working on that. Now there's NFL Pro Era. This is the first NFL VR game where you're playing as the quarterback, picking plays to run and throwing to your wide receivers or, you know, running back or whatever the player requires. It's supposed to be pretty good. So that's cool. I think it's going to be a free upgrade if you already own it on PSVR. So there's that.
I didn't even know it was on the regular PSVR. I actually played that in London, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a game that's supposed to be pretty good. Let's see, there's What the Bat. If you know the game What the Golf, this is the follow-up, but in VR.
Mm-hmm.
So a very silly slapstick comedy game for people that don't care about baseball, but enjoy probably the idea of hitting stuff with baseball bats, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing a lot of it's a very subversive kind of game, because like What the Golf would have, you know, some of your first couple, you know, holes would be, you know, knocking a ball through, you know, the course to the hole, and it would be like, all right, you try to swing your golf club and you're actually swinging your golfer, and then got to get the golfer into the hole, and does a lot of weird stuff as you go. All of that kind of stuff. So it seems like they're going to do a lot of that same kind of stuff, but in, you know, 3D and in VR. So that's cool. A bit of a surprise there. Then Enhance is bringing Res Infinite to PlayStation VR 2,
mm-hmm.
As well as the PS5. Big upgrade for that. $10 upgrade for that. That'll be there at launch. That's cool. They also mentioned that the eye tracking stuff can be used to control the cursor,
mm-hmm.
Instead of just, you know, analog sticks or your the way that you would do it in VR is you would, you know, aim your head. So instead of having to move your head around, you can just look around with your eye with that stuff. So that's cool. They're also bringing Tetris Effect Connected to PlayStation VR 2, mm-hmm. As well as the PS5 with an upgrade for $10 at launch. So that's cool. Yeah, more reasons to check that game out, because that is a fantastic Tetris game.
Yep.
Let's see, Creed Rise to Glory Championship Edition. This is an upgraded version of Creed Rise to Glory, I guess. Yeah, that'll be releasing around the same time that the new Creed movie is coming out, Creed 3. That's the movie's out March 3rd. I think this will be out for launch for PlayStation VR 2. So it has, you know, all the characters from the original game, as well as, I assume, some new ones from the new movie. So that'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a free upgrade. Looks like it's technically a new game. I don't know. The Last Clockwinder is a puzzle automation game about making synchronized contraptions out of your own clones. Okay, that's cool. I don't think that's been out on PSVR before, but that's coming to launch as well. And so they show a big list here for the launch lineup, or launch window lineup, they're technically calling it, because there's a couple of these games that are launch windows. So they may be out at launch day. They might be out, you know, a few days later, a few weeks later. But yeah, there's After the Fall, Altair Breaker, Before Your Eyes, Cities VR, Cosmonius High, Creed Rise to Glory Championship Edition, The Dark Pictures Switchback. That one has a fucked up thing with the eye tracking where there'll be some enemies where every time you close your eyes, they move closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just fucked up thing to do to people. That's launch window. Creed's launch window. Before Your Eyes is launch window.
Mm-hmm.
There's Demio. That's that like D&D tabletop kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dyschronia, Chronos Alternate, Fantavision 2020X, Gran Turismo 7's a free update to the PS5 version. For that, Horizon Call of the Mountain, Job Simulator, which the Alchemy Labs confirmed is a free upgrade if you owned it on PSVR, Jurassic World Aftermath, Kayak VR Mirage, Kizuna AI, Touch the Beat, The Last Clockwinder, The Light Brigade. That is cross-buy, so it's, you know, launching on February 22nd, so you'll get both versions. Moss 1 2 Remaster, which is not a free upgrade. It's not a paid upgrade. You have to rebuy it, which I think that decision makes them look not as great. I was thinking about maybe getting the bundle of both of those, but seeing, you know, Tetris, Thumper, and Rez getting like paid upgrades for just $10. The Thumper isn't announced just yet, but I assume it'll probably be like $10. That makes Moss 1 and 2, the That Dev Polyarch, maybe it's a tactical error. on their part, making that a little more expensive to play those games on the new hardware. NFL Pro Era, yeah, that's a free upgrade. No Man's Sky launch window, that's an update for the PS5 version. Pavlov VR, Pistol Whip, which is a free upgrade if you own it on PSVR. Puzzling Places is a free upgrade. Resident Evil Village is a free update for the PS5 version. Resident Infinite, which is a paid upgrade. Song in the Smoke, which I believe is supposed to be a free upgrade. Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, Enhanced Edition. Synth Riders is a free upgrade. The Tale of Onogoro is coming out. Tentacular, also coming. Tetris Effect is a paid upgrade. Thumper is a paid upgrade. Walking Dead Saints and Sinners Chapter 2 Retribution, that's launch window. Vacation Simulator is a free upgrade. What the Bats and Zenith the Last City is a free upgrade. Pretty good lineup. It's kind of full of some of the greatest hits of what has been popular on PlayStation VR and PC VR stuff, as well as some new things. That makes for a pretty good lineup, and this is not all of it, because their devs confirming things even after they announced this stuff and making it. Makes it look like it's going to have a pretty strong start.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum there. Like, I do appreciate the fact that there's a lot of games in this lineup, and there's really no limit to anything that you can get here. But yeah, I do like that a lot of the upgrades are free, especially, like, you know, if you're somebody that had a PSVR and, like, had the opportunity to play all that, a lot of these games but didn't have the opportunity to finish them. And it's sort of a solution to, you know, the main criticism of the lack of backward compatibility just due to the different hardware involved. But yeah, it is disappointing to see that a lot of the, or not a lot, but a few of the more marquee games that were available previous gen are paid upgrades, specifically Moss and, like, games like Tetris and whatnot, because, like, these are the games that I had, like, the most fun on PSVR, and, like, you know, it's not exactly the cheapest investment. Like, you know, getting a PSVR 2 is more expensive than getting a PS5 itself, and, like, you would hope that, you know, you'd have the opportunity to just get on there easily. And luckily, like, there are games that allow you to do that, but, you know, for the most part, it didn't fully happen. But, you know, you can't have everything, but hopefully this is a lineup that a lot of early adopters can really enjoy. For me, although I'm not getting it day one, the one that I'm most looking forward to is the Horizon game. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think some of these are paid because the devs are putting in extra work to get them upgraded, and also they're not VR exclusives for Thumper, Tetris, and Res Infinite. So people with just regular PS5s can get in on those as well. So that's cool for them. And also Enhance does a great job with their stuff, so I'm more than fine giving them an extra $20 to upgrade those games for that stuff, as I still wait for whatever they're doing next. I think they're still working on that Humanity game. It got announced a few years ago. So yeah, they put out a weird tweet on the Humanity Games Twitter account. Like, oh, you probably figured out we're not coming out in 2022. It's like, all right, I guess they've been doing that at the end of every year that they haven't been able to release in. And that was a PS4 PSVR game. So I assume that's going to be upgraded to be on PS5. And PSVR too. But yeah, this is a pretty solid lineup. I think for people that, you know, enjoy their PlayStation VRs, people that probably bought more than they could play, hopefully have some stuff here that they can upgrade for free on launch day. So I'm looking forward to getting my headset in here. That'll be next month, February 22nd. It's January 22nd right now, so that's just 1 month away. I'll try and stream as much of this stuff as I can for what I can afford. Should be getting a decent amount for free here, for free upgrades and such. But yeah, that'll be a fun couple of streams to do, hopefully. So yeah, there you go. PlayStation VR 2 looking like it'll have a pretty strong start for that. So yeah, good stuff. team that's not having a great time, Ace Games, Ace Team, working on Clash Artifacts of Chaos. I mentioned this in our first quarter of 2023 release preview. This is a game that was supposed to come out February 9th. It is basically the world of Xenoclash, but in a Souls-like, which is a very interesting way to take that series.
Oh, yeah.
But unfortunately, they said, hey, we're not going to be able to make it February 9th. They're planning now to release on March 9th, which I'm looking at that release list. Well, Skull and Bones is not releasing that day, so that's a much easier day for them. That's Fatal Frame, Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, and Oni Road to be the Mightiest Oni. So much less competition there for that time frame. I think the week after that is Legend of Heroes, Trails to Azure, and maybe Bayonetta Origins. That might be the week after, technically. Not sure. No, that'd be the week before that. Okay, so. And The Last of Us Part 1 on PC and Wolong Fallen Dynasty is the week before, so they're falling into a pretty good slot there for releases. But yeah, if you were looking forward to that, you'll have to wait another month. Hopefully that game is in pretty good shape, so it's worth the extra month. So there you go for that. Next up, we got a big surprise. EA is finally launching one of their games, big sports games they announced a while ago. The NCAA game's still MIA for a while. But their PGA Tour game is finally coming out March 24th. Only for the new consoles and PC. And that'll be a $70 game. So cool that they are finally getting a new one of those out. Not letting 2K just run away with the PGA golf, you know, sim thing here. But I think they have exclusivity over the majors for the PGA Tour. So the Masters Tournament, PGA Championship, U.S. Open Championship, and the Open Championship. So there you go. I think there's been some previews coming out for this game. Seems like it's going to be pretty solid. So that's neat. Though if you want to spend more money, you can get a $85 version that has 3 days early access and some extra cosmetics and whatever premium PGA Tour points are, an XP bundle, and some extra gear. So probably not worth it, but the game itself seems like it'll be pretty solid for what that is. So yeah, there you go. New golf game, big golf game. Finally competition in one of these sports, as many of them are single company sports competition. So yeah, there you go. And for more bad news, though not surprising bad news, Marvel's Avengers is on its last legs.
What a shock.
They've announced that their last update will be out March 31st, version 2.8. Let's see. It will not add any new content. Instead, it will deliver final balance updates. And yeah, it will turn off the cosmetics marketplace. Essentially, all the cosmetic items that have been going up in the shop, changing out every day, every week, whatever. All of that will be free. All the outfits, takedowns, emotes, and nameplates will be free for all players starting on March 31st. So that's cool. They're not going to charge people for that stuff anymore. I believe if you do have the paid currency in the game, that'll be getting converted to in-game resources. I think if you look up the FAQ for this update, they will tell you what the conversion is for that. So that'll at least give you a little bit of benefit there. And then the official support for the game will end completely on September 30th. And that includes delisting the game. Single player, multiplayer will still be playable. But yeah, you just will not be able to purchase it from digital storefronts anymore. For that. And yeah, kind of the end to a game that was aiming to be the be all end all of, you know, comic games. But was a game that was made for, you know, a live service environment that did not back it up with, you know, the content to,
yeah,
you know, deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the whole handling of the release was very, very much maligned. It comes with a very, actually a really interesting single player mode that eventually branches out into the multiplayer mode. Mm. And then from there, it was just like confusion from beginning to end. Like, at the very beginning, you could only use like one of each character. And at the time, there weren't very many characters to use in the first place. And that was just a mess. Then they eventually fixed it and had you use like whoever you want. So if you want to have four Hulks, by all means. And like people were also finding entries into certain content that they weren't able to get until like last month. And remember, this game has been out like almost like 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a huge mess ever since. And like they really, you could tell that there was actually some effort there, especially with their content roadmaps and their treasure trove events. But at the end of the day, like, you know, with a game like this, you have to continuously trudge out content. And then this combined with the fact that Square Enix pretty much got rid of Eidos Interactive, pretty much confirmed the writing on the wall there. I'm sure the Embracer can go ahead and continue to afford to support the game, but continuing going with the fact that the population continues to dwindle every day, it didn't do in any favor. So the announcement had to come sooner than later. But aside from all that, they're doing a good thing with the with the refocus on the microtransactions here by making you be able to trade them all in for resources and make all of the costumes free, because that's what people wanted in the first place, to pay for it free. Like, you have access to them. And they're also still going to continue to, like, you know, keep the servers up. Like, we don't know when they'll die, but, you know, for the foreseeable future, you could still play it. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to pull an Overwatch and be like, that game doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
If your disc, it's technically Overwatch 2 now, but
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're hoping to get those trophies and achievements, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So yeah, but at least the campaign for Marvel's Avengers is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game that didn't need all the loot that it has, especially when it's not cosmetic loot. Anyway, but yeah, you'll be able to get all these costumes for free, so at least you'll be able to mess around with that stuff and play it. Played at your own pace, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they'll have it on sale at some point before September 30th, so might be a good time to grab it. Unless they're trying to charge more than they should for it.
Mm-hmm.
If they put that on sale for like 10 or 20 bucks, I think people would buy it.
Mm.
Knowing that they're going to get, you know, not have to grind out currency or anything for that. All that free cosmetic stuff.
Oh yeah.
Anymore. That'll be nice for them. So yeah, there you go. Marvel's Avengers is finally ending its suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Coffee Talk episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly. Finally has a release date of April 20th. For everything. All the PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC. 3 different storefronts on PC. So you'll be able to get that almost anywhere you want. That is the sort of chill narrative game where you're a barista at a coffee shop that has a wide variety of clientele.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, orcs and I'm not sure, humans. Who else? A bunch of variety of, like, elves and succubus. A bunch of different people that are of various fantasy races.
Yeah.
To talk about their problems, their you know, happiness, all that kind of stuff. As you mix up coffees and hot chocolates and teas and all that stuff for them.
Mm.
Pretty fun chill game.
Yeah.
Checking out the first one.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more of it. Especially because I think the original creator of the game passed away last year.
Yeah.
So they are finishing up that work. I don't know if the team's going to keep working on more of these.
Mm.
I assume you're not naming this episode 2 to be like, we're done. But cool that they got the chance to finish that
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Let's see. And that's it for the date stuff, but we do have some more news here.
Mm-hmm.
First up, Stadia has died. It's done.
Yep.
No more having to care about it.
It's gone forever.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's taken some games with it. One such game, Gunsport, was a multiplayer, like cyberpunk volleyball game, something like mm-hmm. that. A 2D volleyball game that Necrosoft made, was unfortunately unable to really properly like port it anywhere, but they did make a sequel that came out fairly recently last year, mm-hmm. Hyper Gunsport. And for the Steam version, they figured out a way to essentially sneak Gunsport into an update so that you could play it if you check out one of the beta branches
mm-hmm.
For it. It's an offline version, so you can play local for that, because I don't think they intend to go back to it to, you know, reconfigure how its online stuff is done or anything like that. But they have made that available for free for people that own Hyper Gunsport on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a neat little backdoor way to preserve that game for people. So that's cool.
Mm.
I'm curious to see if we'll get any more of those Stadia exclusives making its way elsewhere, either officially or unofficially.
We'll see.
Yep. But yeah, if you want to check out that game that you no longer have a way to check out, so there you go. And let's see. Oh yeah, something awesome to happen. Awesome Games Done Quick just ended here last weekend. And yeah, they had 150 speed runs, 4 that broke world records.
Yep.
Cool thing. They raised funds for the Prevent Cancer Foundation and managed to raise $2.6 million. A great amount of money for them. I watched a number of the runs here. There's one for Power Wash Simulator that was pretty neat. That was just a 6-player run using the online co-op where they use the tri-tip nozzle, and they had to work a very specific way because apparently that specific nozzle causes lag on the server. So if people start trying to clean a thing before everybody's loaded in, the person that, you know, appears last has to like re-download the dirt, and it slows everything down. So they spend a lot of time just like, all right, everybody load it in, get into position, and they just start going nuts on the thing. 6 people, it just goes real fast. I forget how long it was, but that one set a world record for that kind of run. But I think if you were to play it solo through the campaign, it's still like 7-8 hours, something like that, for a run. But yeah, there's lots of short runs, lots of longer runs. Was on Cryostasis I was watching. That was a cool one. That's a very janky Eastern European first-person shooters, like horror game, set on a boat. So I think made by, it's either Eastern European or Russian dev or whatever. But I like the runs where like we put it in the Spanish dub because that's like 30 seconds faster than everything else. And they basically just glitch through the walls and just jump down on the walls, the boundaries of the level to like skip hours worth of content in that game. That's fun. Especially when one of the commentators is like, I just played it like casually through the game for the first time. And it's like, this was like an hour and he beat it in 2 minutes. That kind of stuff. That's always fun. But you can go check out the GDQ YouTube channel to check out a lot of these things. There's some I skipped over because it's like, I want to play that. I don't want to get spoiled on things for as much as you can get spoiled in some of these. So there's generally like 2 different kinds of speedruns. There's the ones that are like legit playthroughs versus ones that they find skips and glitches and bugs and such to exploit that let them skip large chunks of the game. And so, yeah, if you see ones that are longer, that's why, because there are a lot of ways that they don't aren't able to skip things, mm-hmm. at least as far as they know.
Yeah.
It's fun when they talk about, like, oh, there was somebody that's just playing this game and they just managed to find a skip that nobody else did. Mm. All that kind of fun stuff. So, yeah, there you go. Every one of their events is great because they do a great job of focusing on inclusivity and getting rid of shitty people.
Mm-hmm.
And raise money for good charities.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, capitalism is not a charity.
Nope.
Ubisoft, one of them. Mm-hmm. They canceled games last week and delayed Skull and Bones. And the way they handled that internally seemed to be pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Yves Guillemot basically sending a meeting or sending memos out that essentially said, blamed it on the workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, we need to, be very fiscally responsible and not waste our money and time and all this. And it's like, what do you mean they have to do that?
Yeah.
You guys are the ones with the purse strings making the decisions for what to green light and
mm-hmm.
leading to this situation where you've canceled, seven or eight games in the past year.
Yeah.
And delaying a bunch repeatedly. And so, yeah, they had like a Q&A with the devs around the company. And it did not go well for Yves.
Nope. No, it did not.
Yeah. After the ball is in your court, like memo, somebody said here, the ball is now in our court. For years, it has been in your court. So why did you mishandle the ball so badly? So we, the workers, have to fix it for you. Let's see, what else did they have to say? He opened the meeting, Eve, saying, I heard your feedback and I'm sorry this was perceived that way. Which is not really an apology there.
Nope.
Saying, I'm sorry you got that impression.
Mm-hmm.
When saying the ball's in your court to deliver our lineup on time at the expected level of quality, I wanted to convey the idea that more than ever, I need your talent and energy to make it happen. This is a collective journey that starts, of course, with myself and with the leadership team to create the conditions for all of us to succeed together. While that seemed to help some people, others still feel like they're out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just using buzzwords to make it seem like they know what they're doing. That kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to handle that stuff. And I believe, what is it? Ubisoft Paris has at least a union for some of its people, if not all. Mm-hmm. They were basically calling for like a half day strike to raise awareness of the concerns that they have for pay and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like making demands for like a 10% raise
mm-hmm.
for everybody and a move to a 4-day work week,
mm-hmm.
Which is definitely a lot to ask for, but also
that's kind of what you're supposed to do. Yeah.
You start there and then maybe work your way down.
Yeah.
Cause maybe you don't get 10%, but maybe you get 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at least something to get.
Yeah, it's just a mess all around. We talked about it last week. Ubisoft is a company with a lot of IP that people care about, but it's being done in such a way where there's really no room for creative variety. And then when you think it's going to be there, you don't know what the progress is. Like, I don't know how long we've been waiting for Beyond Good and Evil 2. I don't know how long we've been waiting for Rayman. With Assassin's Creed, they're going backwards, but it might be a good thing, going back to like the way Assassin's Creed was originally developed. But Guillermo is doing absolutely no favors. His response seems totally tone deaf. Like he takes what he says and brings it back, but all of a sudden makes it worse again. Like, I know that English is not this guy's first language, and that's definitely a struggle, but it all goes back to the fact that the leaders are not doing their employees the proper service and treatment they deserve in order to really make a good game. And at the end of the day, the studio heads are pretty much choosing what games are being developed when Ubisoft has a proud history of things being made here.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying Mario and Rabbids didn't sell according to expectation, but that's also a game that's, you know, $20 within 3 weeks of release. People know that. So, you know, you would hope that the valuable IP they work with remain valuable, but it's just not. This quote here about, you know, Far Cry 6 not being diverse enough yet at the same time, like, I thought it was a solid game, but it didn't do enough. Like, all that is incredibly accurate. So, you know, I really feel for the employees here and what they're dealing with, and I hope they turn it around, but it's tough to see that happening in the immediate future with Yves Guillemot in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with layoffs happening all around the industry and companies around this country and the world, I think Ubisoft is planning to not lay off people, but essentially not hire people,
mm-hmm.
and just let them sort of naturally annoy people enough to them leaving, and then not, you know, rehiring people or hiring people to replace them, mm-hmm. like just bleed off the people that don't want to be there, I guess,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is a way to go through that.
Yeah.
And also you have less to do with like severance and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, that's a company that has a lot of people for the past year or so, not a ton to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of companies with a lot of people, Microsoft, they had a big thing happen this week, which is that they laid off 10,000 people at their company, a bunch of them at Xbox. I think 343 Industries and the Coalition and Bethesda Game Studios also had a bunch of people get laid off. Let's see here. Yeah, they plan to finish laying the full 10,000 off by Q3 of this year. Mm-hmm. So still not even done with that, but at least 878 positions in Microsoft's Washington location has been cut. And yeah, the way they've been talking about this is not great.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very much in the vein of infinite growth capitalism, mm-hmm. where they're still looking at growth this year, but it's slower than last year. So that means they got to cut people out, to make up for some of that money. And this has nothing to do with the Activision Blizzard acquisition, because you would not be laying off this many people to make way for the, you know, roughly 10,000 people that Activision Blizzard has.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how that stuff would work. And this also isn't related to the pandemic, like the hiring they've done since the pandemic started.
Yeah.
It's another narrative a lot of these companies put out as like, oh, we overhired. It's like, no, you're Microsoft. You can afford to keep these people around.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe cut out, you know, less than 10,000 people, but, you know, 10,000 is a lot to do, especially when they're doing over the course of most of this year. This is just because they want to cut off the fat, about 5% of their total workforce.
Mm-hmm.
With that. At least it seems like they are doing well by these people as far as severance,
mm-hmm.
Like 6 months of severance and extended, you know, healthcare. That kind of stuff. I think stock stuff as well has been extended for quite a while for them. So they're not going to be, you know, essentially just getting the boot and nothing to show for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not great for, conveniently coming up on Wednesday, the Developer Direct. I'm assuming they did not lay off anybody that's going to be in any of those videos,
mm-hmm.
On that, because that would be a big shit show.
Mm-hmm.
But also still a shit show having a Developer Direct after you've, you know, laid off at least dozens of developers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the timing there is absolutely terrible. You know, like you mentioned, with the Developer Direct coming up, and ever since Microsoft made the layoff, I don't know if this is the case, but I haven't seen any statement or anything from Phil Spencer, who, you know, like the majority of us think he's a great guy and has been awesome for Xbox's forward momentum. But, you know, with all the growth that we've seen Xbox do, especially with all the acquisitions they've been making, and to all of a sudden have these layoffs in studios such as 343, and a whole bunch of other, like, you know, studios that we've known Xbox to be the brand name for. It's kind of heartbreaking. That being said, like, yeah, it's been rough for tech in general over these past few months. Like, it's pretty stupid that the silver lining in all this is that at least they weren't fired over the holidays. But at the end of the day, a lost job is a lost job. And these aren't small layoffs. These are, you know, 5% is a huge number. 1,000 people is a huge number. If you were to take everybody that's been laid off over the past 3 months, you can fill an NBA arena. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's sad. I think there is an email that Phil sent out to, you know, people internally.
Mm-hmm.
That is just full of a lot of the generic platitudes you expect out of somebody running company or the segment of the company.
Mm-hmm.
To the people about, you know, being tough to, you know, lay these people off and all that. But yeah, the veneer on Phil Spencer is kind of wearing off a bit lately.
Mm-hmm.
With this stuff, as people realize that he may be the cool CEO, but he's still a CEO.
Mm.
That he's still a guy that lives and works on a scale that, you know, very few people around get to. And when he jokes about having, you know, classified, tech in his house while doing, you know, taking, you know, selfies and whatnot, doing videos, all that's, you know,
mm-hmm.
He's still a CEO. He's still the boss man in their company. The Xbox stuff has not had a great time for so far this generation or last generation since he took over.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of development that has not gone great for them. Plenty that has, but, and, you know, the Game Pass stuff is doing well for them, but this year is definitely an important year for them to actually get, you know, games out and show that the all those acquisitions were for something.
Mm-hmm.
And not for nothing, wasting people's time. And that's part of what that developer direct seems to be for.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Microsoft, doing what Microsoft does, and yeah, adding more questions to the Activision Blizzard acquisition as sort of how this company is supposed to make that acquisition make sense.
Yeah.
Beyond the fact that, you know, they're Microsoft. They're one of the biggest companies in the world. And mm-hmm. I think they had profit of like $72 billion last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that essentially would pay for the Activision Blizzard acquisition by itself. But yeah, that a company that makes that much money in profit needs to lay off 10,000 people is definitely very sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's capitalism right now with a lot of these companies where, you know, they're spending a lot of money on stock buybacks and all that kind of shit versus, you know, investing into the company itself versus enriching the shareholders that demand blood if their numbers aren't high enough.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the Microsoft news. Hopefully yeah. Things look better after that developer direct, but it's also going to be a bit of a weird celebration
mm-hmm.
Of sorts for the Xbox development community.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, this also puts 3 for 3 being one of the biggest hit parts of it is definitely
mm-hmm.
Going to raise a lot of questions for what Infinite's future is.
Mm-hmm.
Halo Infinite. There were rumors going around like, oh, they've been taken off of Halo, which isn't true at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably not investing as much into Halo Infinite as people would like.
Mm-hmm.
Despite it being, you know, a free-to-play live service game. That seems like that's probably not going to be something they heavily invest in. It may just push them to further move away from that slipspace engine mm-hmm. For whatever's next.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, there you go. That is it for this week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. Hopefully more positive stuff to talk about.
Yep.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to Brandon and Dameron for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know that they should check it out. Mm-hmm. And select strangers that hopefully didn't get laid off recently.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll be back next week, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.